Hey everybody, and welcome to the Katie Weaver Show. This is Katie, I'm your host. I'm so happy to be here. If you are listening live, it is the 2nd of December already at about 11 a.m. Pacific time. If you're listening to an archive or a replay, I also want to welcome you to the show. Per normal, I want to let you know we're over in the chat room, and you can find that by heading over to 12radio.com. That's number 12radio.com. Click on the chat button and you'll be redirected into the Facebook chat. I also want to let you know that I am live streaming this event, and so you can watch rather than just listen. If you'd like to go over to YouTube or Facebook and look for Katie Weaver Domestic Mystic, and you should find my stream there. So that is what's up. Big mouthful. Always something that has to be said before the beginning of the show, or at the beginning of the show, I guess. Oh, how's it going? How was your weekend? How was Thanksgiving if you celebrate? I had a really good week. Mars came home on Monday to help us do some stuff, and it was great to have her home and to have a little extra help. But we had bought out earlier this in November somebody's ceramic business, and it was just all in a storage unit. It was an old lady that had passed, and this was her husband, cleaning out her stuff. But there were over 1,000 molds and two big kilns and 25 boxes of completed bisque or greenware, or some already painted or glazed pieces that were amazing. It was very cool. I gave away all of the already done bisque. Well, I kept a few pieces that I wanted to finish, but most of it I gave away. We've spent this whole month going through this stuff. It took four loads with our truck and trailer to get all the molds home. It has been an enormous amount of work. And I've helped as I could, but as you can imagine, Scott has put in a crazy amount of work. Yeah, an extremely good deal. When I started looking at this stuff, he had the price like three times what I paid for it, but it sat and it sat and it sat. And I finally one morning thought, you know what? I really do want this stuff. I'm going to message him and see what his bottom dollar is. He was too high in the beginning, to be sure. But anyway, he came down quite a bit. He actually dropped it down lower. When I asked what his bottom line was, he dropped it down $100 lower than I was planning on offering him, believe it or not. So we jumped on it. So, and the thing is with the kilns, I don't need them. One of them is actually a 110, meaning it, runs on lower power. So I actually did, I'm going to keep that one because I want it for a glass project. But the other big kiln, I'm just going to sell. And that, the kiln itself, that kiln is worth probably $500 all by itself. But the major score in those was the Christmas trees. She had, I'm going to say probably 10 or 12 Christmas tree molds. And the vintage Christmas tree molds are tough to come by. They are very, very expensive. And you just don't get them very often. Like these were probably from the 80s. Most of her stuff was 70s and 80s. But I mean, the molds themselves are so big. Scott can hardly strong arm them, and Scott is a big, strong man. I would have no hope or prayer of being able to pour them, but I forgot to bring Christmas trees in here to show you, so I'm hoping Scott's listening or available to bring me in some trees. I'm going to message him real quick. Let's see if he'll bring me some Christmas trees, because that is the find. Our trees aren't quite done yet because the Christmas tree molds were in the very front of the unit. The stands were just kind of peppered throughout. And so we came across the molds immediately and started working on those. But the stands aren't done yet. We have found them and poured them now, but so we've done four of them. So these are the trees that have the little tiny lights in them. When I show you, you'll see. Mine don't even have the lights in them yet. They're just glazed, but they are so pretty. So anyway, those along with those kilns were worth what I paid for the entire unit, which was pretty amazing. But yeah, so fun stuff. I've got projects for years. And we can't do this again with molds because we are 150,000% out of space for them. But I did want to show you a couple of things that I got out of the kiln a day or two ago. These mugs. I have two. These are going to go on Etsy hopefully today. But they are the cauldron mugs, but they have solid handles, which was the problem with the first one. But they just turned out so pretty. I'll show you the other one too here in a minute. But I'm super excited about these. Will you get that other mug for me too on the counter? So this is what the trees look like. Aren't they gorgeous? So, but they're full of little tiny drilled holes, and they'll all have little lights in them. And then they have and the lights are just plastic lights, but then they have a big light that goes up the center of it that illuminates those lights. But this one just has one little light in it that I put in for fun, but it's actually a tiny bird. Look at this. This one is going to be all red birds. So, yeah, very cool. Exciting stuff. This is the other mug. Look at the glazing on this. Look at the handle. Yeah. To say I'm in love with this would be an absolute understatement. This is so gorgeous. And it's pretty in this picture, but you have no idea the depth until you really see it with your human eye. But really cool. Okay, and one more Christmas tree. This one is blue. It's kind of hard to see in this light, but it's a light blue. It's like a light blue crackle glaze. And it's so damn beautiful. Yeah, the Christmas tree or the mugs are microwave safe, Jane. Yes, they are. And those mugs are so big. They hold 32 ounces of fluid. Anyway, so that's what I've been working hard on. And I glazed the last tree yesterday, so she'll go in the kiln in the next day or two. But just fun stuff. It's where both of most of a both of that was probably right the first time. That's where both of my brain cells have been going. So fun. And thank this mug came from HomeGoods, but isn't she cute? I love her. I've kind of started my own little tradition with myself of picking up a new mug at HomeGoods for every holiday. Because HomeGoods, holy hell. Have you guys ever been in a HomeGoods? Wow. Their holiday spreads are unbelievable. Oh, Jane has a teeny microwave but needs a big mug for oatmeal. Oh yeah, this baby would do it. Definitely. I mean, ceramic do tend to get a bit of a hot handle. So you have to just be careful pulling them out. But yeah, they're totally microwave safe. But it was also cookie day. So we did Thanksgiving at Kara's house per normal. And then we went shopping. We did Black Friday shopping, kind of. Well, we did, but we didn't. Nobody had a lot to do. You know, Black Friday is just, it's not the same anymore, but it's just still a tradition that lives on for us. So we did a few stores. We did Target and the mall. Ended up in a wheelchair at the mall because there was just no possible way. And so my sweet nephew, Mike, pushed me around the mall, and it was really sweet of him. I made some good traction at Barnes and Noble. But and then we had breakfast at Black Bear Diner, which is another tradition for us. Yeah, which was all good. And then we hosted Cookie Day this year, which we normally don't, but Kara had back surgery 2 weeks ago. And so I don't think we can just keep piling so many opportunities or obligations onto her. It's not right. So we improvised. We set up lots of tables inside and outside. And what did we do? We did cookie day at my house, and it worked out just fine. So I want to show you. Yeah, and that's it. Tara, she said there was a beautiful mug at the market she was at this weekend, but she wanted $70 for it. I loved it, but too much for me. Yeah, and that's pretty much. These are going to be 65. I know exactly. Yeah. Okay. Cookie stuff. Hey, Cookie Day 2025 is in the books. We're filming in my backyard or front yard this time because that's where we could keep everything cold.
So, we have eggnog fudge with screwball eggnog whiskey. We have these darling dipped cookies that Kara made. Oh, Christy did the fudge, by the way. We have no-bake cookies from Kara. We have these beautiful little pavlova, individual pavlovas, filled with rhubarb strawberry compote.
Made by Mars.
Then Matea made these white chocolate cranberry pecan bites. Mia made this Christmas crack that, oh good Lord, is really good. I made these. They are cream cheese raspberry puffs out of puff pastry. And then I made these little cakes. You can't really see how cute they are, but they are gingerbread cake with cream cheese nutmeg frosting. And then Matea made a bunch of cute spritz cookies. And then Christy made candy cane bark. And Rhonda. And then Kara did a bunch of dipped pretzels and more dipped cookies. And that's it. We've had so much fun today. Tons of friends and visiting and just a beautiful day. And it's been so damn cold, we can just cool everything outside. So, but no snow, so we'll take it.
Yeah, cookie day 2025. Everything turned out amazing. The pavlova was probably the biggest challenge. Mars had never done a meringue-based recipe before. And she wasted, my gosh, she wasted 36 eggs before she got that batch to turn out. 36 eggs in this economy. Just kidding. You know I have hens, but... But we finally got it figured out. Here's a few notes. Follow the instructions explicitly and don't try to double this recipe nor triple it. Both things will fail. She and Micah had gone out to gather eggs right before we started because pavlova meringue or any meringue comes together a lot better if it is with the freshest eggs. The fresher the better. So, you know, we're lucky to have, you know, the freshest eggs you can possibly get. So they went out to gather, but Mars is terrified of the chickens. She doesn't like birds at all. You ought to see what she goes through with the geese at her college. It's really something. But anyway, so Micah made her go out with him to gather eggs because he's a mean big brother, you know, and they walked out there to gather eggs together, but she refused to go in the coop. But then she wasted 36 of their eggs. She did, we worked it out. And yes, luckily we have eggs and we hadn't gathered in several days. So there was plenty of eggs there for her to use. So it was all fine. But I told her after that second batch failed, I'm like, we're going to run out of eggs. You're going to have to go out there and start squeezing chickens. She didn't think so. So pavlova is this meringue. It's this really light meringue and you bake it for a long time at low temp, and it really dries it out and gets crispy. But you kind of, when you make it, you use your spoon and you kind of form a little well in the middle of it for your fruit and stuff. And we had raspberries, or not raspberries, we had strawberries and rhubarb in the freezer from the summer. My sister-in-law's mother-in-law, Trudy, who's just kind of a matriarch in our family, she's one of the only ones anymore, lives not too far from me. And she has a huge raspberry plant, or rhubarb, wow, every time, rhubarb plant that just goes crazy every year. So we always go out and cut it back a little bit and take what we want and chop it up and freeze it so that you have rhubarb all year. And we had strawberries in the freezer too from a flat that Scott bought this summer. So anyway, she made this compote, and the compote was pretty sour. She didn't make it super sweet, and it just was so good on the super sweet pavlova. Oh my gosh. It honestly stole the day. It was so good. But yeah, geese, you don't blame her. I'll tell you what's funny about it. Because she parks by the park. She parks in the park next to the zoo in Boise, where she lives. And the zoo, right next to the zoo, there are just so many geese living in that park. And so at least I don't think she parks there this year, but last semester she was. And so the geese are just all over the place and all over up in your business. And she hates geese and she's afraid of them. But 2 times last semester, she saw people harassing the geese and she yelled at them and bitched them out and took a video of it and told them she was reporting them to the city. I said, "You are just the strangest champion for the geese." And she said, "Mom, I don't want the geese to hate people more than they do. Then they'll just attack me." Plus, you know, she knows what the right thing to do is, and not letting people harass animals is definitely it. But it just cracks me up. She's championing the geese. She is their official attorney, but she's also hates their guts. Jane said, "We have 4-foot geese here. They are scary, they're territorial and aggressive." Yeah, geese can actually be total jerks. These geese have never been naughty to her in the park. And in the spring, they're babies. Oh, dear God, they're so cute. But, you know, she's very hesitant. Oh, JR said seagulls. Yeah, yes. I'm not afraid of seagulls, but I saw a seagull incident one time that, well, I'm an asshole, and I'll tell you why. Still laughing about this, and this happened on my honeymoon. So, nigh on to 30 years ago, when Scott and I got married, we went to California for our honeymoon. And one of the things we did was go to SeaWorld. And at SeaWorld, they had this big pool of dolphins that you could pet and feed if you wanted to, buy a thing of little fish. And to be fair, I wouldn't do that now. You know, you do better when you know better, but then it was cool, and we went. Anyway, when they sell you the fish, they tell you you have to keep them covered the whole time or the seagulls will steal them from you. Okay, so we were told this. So we're feeding the dolphins and we're very carefully, you know, you kind of have to keep one hand over it or hold it up close to you and just protect it while you feed. And that's not easy to do, but you know, you have to because the seagulls are just swarming. So there's this guy next to us who is just living his best life, man. He is having a blast feeding the dolphins. He's just winging his fish out there. He is laughing and cheering and having the best time ever. But he isn't covering those fish at all. And I kept looking at him thinking, oh no. And I whispered to Scott, I'm like, that guy's going to get his ass kicked because the seagulls are everywhere. Well, just after I said that, a seagull landed on his arm. Bit him like full on bit him. He was bleeding. And he threw his fish up in the air and bam, they were gone just that fast. We had to leave the area because someone laughed so hard they cried. Because they're a jerk. And Scott was so embarrassed and mad at me. It just the shock of it, I think. You know, are you one of those people that laugh when something shocks you? I do. And it just, I don't know why it was so damn funny. It wasn't. It was awful. The poor guy. And he was so disappointed. Well, and injured. But I'm telling you, if I saw a video of it on the internet, I'd probably watch it 20 times and laugh until tears ran down my cheeks. So, I mean, I have not changed in 30 years. It's still funny to me to this day. Scott, if I brought it up, would probably still be mad at me to this day. Because it was just flat out mean. But come on, man. I know they told you to cover those fish. I know they did. Oh, gosh. Crazy. Jane's terrible with laughing inappropriately. Oh, God. I am awful. The worst place in the world for me is a funeral. A funeral. I laughed so hard at my great grandpa's wedding or funeral, not wedding, funeral. I thought I would b burst a vein in my brain or something. And it's not the out loud laughing, it's the shaking, the biting your cheek, the elbowing the person next to you to knock it off. But at his funeral, it's because, and I'm sure a lot of religions do this, but my experience is with the Mormons, right? My great grandpa was a son of a bitch. He abused his children and his wife his entire their entire lives. He was not nice. He died when I was in my 30s, and I don't know that he even really knew my name. Their house was the house that when you went to, you were not to make any noise. Don't bother Grandpa. Don't talk to Grandpa. Grandma was an angel, but Grandpa was not. And the older he got and the grouchier he got, like, you kept a wide berth from Grandpa. And again, I don't know that he ever one time in my life looked me in the eye or called me by name or acknowledged me really at all or my kids. Like, there was no love lost there for anyone with this man, really. But his funeral, Mormons tend to, at funerals, and again, I'm sure a lot of religions do this. It's not just, and people, it's not just the Mormons, but again, that's my life experience. But they tend to fluff people up in death and make them out to be somebody that they were not. And so at his funeral, they're pontificating about what a good man he was, what a godly man he was, how much he loved his children, how much he loved his grandchildren, and I just couldn't take it. So my sisters and I are sharing some commentary back and forth about what bullshit we're hearing is, and I just couldn't stop laughing. Yes, shaking shoulders, tears, red face, snot, the whole nine yards. And I was in the middle of the chapel, like lots of people on both sides of me. It wasn't like I could just slip out the door. I would have had I been able to, because I couldn't get control of myself at all. I will tell you, Kara is the worst. Kara and I next to each other is an absolute disaster because once it starts, it's never going to end. But it just was, it was so shocking. It shouldn't have been, but it was to hear all of these nice things about this dude. And then, so, the snark that we had going back and forth was so funny that, yeah, it's a miracle we got out of it alive. And I know. Disrespectful? Yes. A jerk? Yes. Yes. I know. But here we are. At any rate. Oh, Jane had that grandpa too. Crunchy, grumpy man. Yeah, mine too. But mean and abusive. Yeah. Well, should we get into our actual topic? We could. Moved Luminous over to all new art for December. No big surprise. I went with Christmas Village themes and lots of lights and trees and the beautiful stuff. Where I live. And I'm sure this is true for most of you, but where I live, a lot of people go do absolutely beautiful things with their yards and their trees. And a lot of people just put up a little light. And now we have the lights that are just the ones that are that stay up year round that are built in. And I have those actually, and that's been really fun. We put them up last year before Christmas, and we have loved having those. You never know. Maybe it's Boise State colors. Maybe it's going to be Valentine's colors. Maybe it's Mardi Gras. Christmas colors now. But anyway, when I was a kid, it was a big deal to get to go look at the Christmas lights. We would load up in the car. We would go to the gas station and get we'd go to Maverick, a local gas station to the west, and we would get hot chocolate. And then we would drive all over town singing Christmas carols, listening to Christmas music, and looking at the lights. That was such a tradition when I was a kid. And it was a big deal for a lot of reasons. I mean, first of all, we just had fun doing it. And a lot of people put up light shows, and it was, or, you know, lights in their yards, and it was fun to go see. But my mother loved Christmas music and loved singing Christmas songs. And so I was raised on belting out every Christmas carol whenever we drove anywhere, actually, around the season. But it was also a big deal because we got to go get a treat from the store. I was not raised with a family that had very much money. My dad was very frugal, and to the point of being accused of being cheap by my mom a few times, but I digress. But to get to go into a store and get a treat was a big deal. We didn't go out to dinner. We did not just get to buy a treat anytime you went into the store. Nothing of the sort. We ate at home. That's how it was. We didn't just get to go out and buy a coffee whenever, or well, we didn't buy coffee anyway, but to go get a hot drink like that or a treat whenever you wanted. That's just not the way it was then, at least in my family. So to get to go buy a hot chocolate at the store, that was a big deal for us and an exciting treat to get to go have. But anyway, so my kids love this tradition too. Interestingly, Scott does not. All of the traditions that you have are in some way formed by experiences that you've had in your lifetime, right? Usually childhood experiences. Well, his family did not do well with holidays. Scott's mom is a narcissistic nightmare in a lot of ways. And that's kind of unfair for me to say. I have not seen or spoken to her in many, many years. But as a kid, for him, holidays were a lot of stress. They weren't fun. She was very angry, she was very anxious, and she was very determined for holidays to be a very certain way. So she couldn't be flexible about anything. And Scott's little brother was quite seriously mentally ill and made everything hard. So between the two of them, holidays weren't fun. They weren't great experiences like I was raised on. They were a lot of stress, and you couldn't wait for them to be over. So their family's version of driving around looking at the Christmas lights was always a big fight. And so, yeah, it's not something that he's ever really enjoyed. Now, it's not with us, and it hasn't been with getting our kids in the car, but it's not something that he has loved. And so for me, I've had to learn that you don't all have to enjoy all the same things, right? You don't. But me and the kids love it, so we go. And we always go get a hot chocolate or a coffee, and we drive all over town and look at the lights and listen to Christmas music and have a blast. I've just been thinking a lot lately about Christmas, not just Christmas, but holiday traditions or their feelings about holidays and how very much they are shaped by your childhood. Even, close to 50 years old, Just interesting. Oh, Jane said her mom loved Christmas music too. One of her last joyful memories of her was singing them with me in the car. Oh, I love that. Well, being raised a Mormon kid, everybody had to learn how to sing and not just belt shit out. We learned how to read music, we learned how to harmonize, we learned parts. Like, somehow I made it out without learning how to play the piano, which is a miracle because it's just almost a prerequisite. It's because I played the clarinet. But Mormon kids are musical kids. They are raised to be. And a lot of Mormon kids go on to have careers in music because they were raised in music. Something I really do appreciate about my upbringing. Okay. Well, let's move on. So, I called this week's magazine the Lightkeepers Edition, because we're going to talk a little about carrying light during darkness and being a beacon of light in the world. So I would love for you to Oh, what in the world? Okay, well, that's really weird. Is my article gone? What the hell? Did it show up like that for you guys that received Luminous this morning? I'm opening the editing software right now. I don't know where my article went. That is so bizarre. No, it shows up in the edited version. That is so weird. So if someone who received Luminous this morning wouldn't mind checking it for me and telling me what. Okay, here's what I'm doing. I pulled myself up on a new stream, so hopefully you can see me now. That is so weird. That was just a problem with StreamYard. Okay, so that should be okay. We should be all back and good to go, yes? Okay. I don't know what that was about. Is Mercury still retrograde? I thought it already went direct. Maybe I don't know. Maybe it's this full moon. Maybe it's me. What? It can't be me. It could be. Okay, well, let's move on. Sorry, guys, for the interruption. That was crazy. All right. So I was thinking about being a light keeper or a light bearer or a light worker. Not just in dark times, as in, oh, thank you, Renee. Not it's in dark times, as in, times are tough necessarily, though it could mean that, because times are tough for a lot of people. But it is also just about it's going dark. The days are much shorter, the nights are much longer, the sun is getting a little tougher to find. So, I was hoping to bring this article to you kind of in the sense of both of those ideas. And also the one where the holidays are really tough for certain people. People that have maybe had a loss in the last year or two, people that are struggling financially, people that are having a rough time in other ways. The holidays just sometimes rub salt into an already festering wound. So, kind of where my energy's at, thinking about how do we be light keepers in the dark? And again, the dark isn't necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes it's just the winter thing, right? Oh, across so many traditions and noetic perspectives, light is information, it's intelligence, it's consciousness. In any spiritual circle, you will hear things like carrying the light or becoming the light or being the light, religions say that, refer to that kind of term. That term comes up in New Age consciousness a lot. I was thinking about the Hindus and Diwali and so many other traditions that light is an important part of their beliefs. So with light, we're talking about aligning with self, right? We're talking about coherence and clarity and integrity. We're talking about light being intention. When you do energy work, you're constantly working with light. If somebody's working on you, they'll say things like, I'm going to wrap you up in light, or the light that I'm seeing is pink, or it's red, or it's blue. But light tells us everything, really. So, what about holding light in difficult situations? This is why people who carry light really matter. Listen, you're going to be the light carrier at certain times in your life, and you're going to be the sucker of light, right? And you might do the same thing, do both of those things during the same season, depending on what you're doing or who you're with. It's okay to be either one. But let's talk about holding light for people that are going to have a rough season. Because you know that December magnifies loneliness, grief, fatigue, poverty. It stirs up old memories, rough family dynamics. The holidays can be hard. So the light keepers are the ones who listen, who offer comfort, who hold the emotional temperature of the room. Many of you do that. Who show up even when they're tired. Who remind others of possibility. The light keepers are sometimes the ones that are accused of being overly optimistic. Sometimes they are the ones who refuse to go down the dark rabbit hole when people are feeling particularly pessimistic. But they're also the ones who might just show up with cookies for no reason. They are the ones who may just check in with you from time to time just because they were thinking about you or they were prompted to. They are likely the ones who will tell someone else to shut the fuck up, that is giving you a hard time. There's a lot of things that light keepers do that they probably don't ever really recognize they're doing because they're carrying light. Light keepers can fight too, right? What about the light you keep for yourself? Flames need shelter, lanterns need tending, souls need rest. Light keepers have to take care of their own light lest they lose it, right? And if you are a person who carries light for other people, and I know you are because you're here, it's important to also make sure that you have good boundaries, that you take care of yourself, and you protect your own energy. Rest is essential. Boundaries are essential. Because without them, you just may give all of your light away to a bunch of dumb shit, right? It's easy to get wrapped up in other people's drama. It is easy to fall for the latest sob story. It doesn't mean it's not relevant, but at the same time, you have to protect your own energy and decide what is truly important to you or what is truly of value to you, where you want to put your energy. You have to. If you can't, if you won't, you will burn out too. You'll find yourself exhausted and bitter and all done. So here's some questions to ask yourself. What brightens me? What dims me? What am I carrying that isn't mine? What warms my inner hearth? What sparks my creativity, my curiosity, or my hope? They're good questions to ask yourself every so often and to lean into those things. If what feeds you Is reading a good book? Do that every day. Make time. If what dims you is going to Walmart, don't go to Walmart. Right? Or limit those trips. If it dims you to go to certain people's houses or be around certain people, they could be family members and you might not be able to avoid that completely, but limit how much of your energy goes to that, right? Or whatever it is. Because believe it or not, you matter too, and your opinion matters too, and what works for you also matters. What I see from so many people, so many light workers especially, and sensitive, empathic people, is that you know what your limits are, kind of. Like you know what you can tolerate to the nth degree, so you'll let yourself suffer so that someone else doesn't have to, right? It's like there being one last cookie on the plate, and you made the cookies, and you haven't eaten one yet because you've been so busy giving them to everyone else. And there's one last cookie, and someone who's eaten four comes for that cookie. What do? 9 times out of 10, you go, "It's okay, you can have it. I'll make some more later," right? Rather than saying, "Yep, I'm taking this one." Without any guilt, without any shame, without any worry, you take it and you enjoy it and you have it, right? But you don't, and I don't, as often as we should. Because we're so busy wanting to be sure that everybody else has what they need. It's a good reminder to think about what you need and make sure you are receiving that. All right. The returning sun. We're going to hit the winter solstice in a few short weeks. This is when the sun hits its lowest point and begins the slow rise. We know that this is an ancient and universal pattern. We know that the light always comes back. We also know that during the period of the winter solstice, it's a really good time for rest, for self-care. But it also reminds us that light is resilient, it's cyclical. It's patient, and it comes back when the time is right. What about service and kindness and the light that we freely give? There's a lot of light that comes from service. It's just the quiet light, right? It's the kind that just creates that energy within your spirit and that hormone within your brain that makes you feel better. However, service does not mean you have to hollow yourself out. If that's what service is doing to you, you need to take a step back and think about what your body needs, what your spirit needs, what you need. Service is really important. It's a way that other people get hope. It's a way that we learn a lot about ourselves. However, it doesn't mean that you have to erase yourself. It doesn't mean you have to put your own light out or just take yours and completely hand it to someone else. So do the things that you want to do. The things that you can do, but don't give more than you have. So, how do you shine wisely? The Lightkeeper archetype should have some simple practices. A daily moment of brightness. Perhaps that is a candle at breakfast, a walk at dusk, a breath of gratitude before bed. Anything you can do that just brightens up your light that's only for you. The archetype says no when they need to, goes to bed early, withdraws from draining conversations, protects their own peace. The archetype offers warmth intentionally, with small acts of service that feel natural and not forced. Just spreading your light a little bit here and there. The archetype anchors themselves. I really like this theory of choosing a word or a symbol that represents your light for the month. And mine this month is literally a candle. It's a light. It's just light. And the archetype can allow themselves to be held. They can allow themselves to lean on their community when their flame flickers. Even light keepers need other light keepers, just like a doctor might need to go to the doctor, right? Light keepers need other light keepers. It's how we continue to keep our flames high. So don't hesitate to ask for help when you need it. One thing I notice sometimes working as a professional energy healer and professional psychic over at One to Listen is that I have a lot of clients that are energy workers, are professional psychics, because we need each other. But I notice sometimes, not with those clients per se, but with clients in general, somebody will call me up and say, I need some work. I am exhausted. I'm completely drained. I have nothing else to give. I'm just done. And we dive in and start doing some clearing and pulling some cords, cleaning up their energy. And you know what we find 9 times out of 10? They were just overdue. Just overdue. And so often people say to me, I should have called you 2 months ago. I have felt horrible for a while. And finally, I just woke up and knew today was the day. And I get it. It's a financial constraint. Sure. For sure. I understand. There's no shame in it. But I do the same thing sometimes. There's a certain shot that I get that helps me to feel better and walk better. And I can have it every 3 months. And I went to the doctor last in May and I said, I am in hell. I am really struggling. I am in an unacceptable level of pain. And the doctor looked at my chart and he said, you know, you can have the shot every 3 months. I said, no, I know. And he said, do you know it's been a year? And I said, I did not, but I could believe it. And he said, why aren't you coming every 3 months? I don't know. I don't know. Because the shot is not painful, and I don't have a problem having shots. I'm not afraid of needles in any way. That doctor's office is an hour drive, but you know, Scott drives me around like Miss Daisy, so it's not like that's a real struggle either. I don't know. It's this weird false sense of trying to be tough, of thinking that there's something noble in that. Do you get what I'm saying? I think you do. But so he said, I would really like to challenge you to not do that for a while and really come in here every 3 months and get the shot and just see how much that could help you. So I've done that. I've done that. And I noticed last week that I'm due for a shot and I'm going to make an appointment and I'm going to go in. And I've been good about it this whole year and I have not suffered needlessly when there is something that helps me, right? But I've been making myself suffer needlessly for years when there were things that could help me. And I think that we do that as people who are empaths because somehow we feel like we can or we should. Or something else is always more important than our comfort. What if we stopped doing that? What if we also refused to suffer or be uncomfortable? What if we made the call for the energy work on a more regular basis because it's good for us? What if we got the damn shot every 3 months and quit being weird about it? What if we did so many other things that make us feel better? How long have you been sleeping on that same lumpy pillow instead of replacing it? How long have you been dealing with other things in your life that you don't like or that you're not comfortable with or don't bring you light and make you happy because you were unable or unwilling to give up the time or the money or the effort to make yourself feel better? I know it's not black and white. I understand that. Sometimes the changes that you need aren't really in your wheelhouse right now. Sometimes the help you need isn't in your wheelhouse. I understand that. So don't think I don't. But that is really my challenge to everyone who finds themselves carrying light, is to make yourself a promise that doing that doesn't take away from you being comfortable and happy in your own skin and in your own life. Jane needs to replace her mattress too. Yeah, boy, that's a big one, isn't it? And however, mattresses have gotten to be a lot less expensive than they used to be. We're lucky on that front. However, it's also a big freaking deal to replace your mattress. I know. That's a big one, though. And the last word on that is to remember that you don't have to carry the whole world. Throw your happy pebbles into the collective pond. Be kind. Create a little bit of service around you where you can. Take good care of yourself, you and yours. And when you do that, that's the kind of light and the energy that you spread out to the world. Kelly's article this week is about From Radium to Right Now, Why OSHA Saves Lives and HR Does Not. This is such a good article and such a good reminder. Part of it is because we are living in a world where corporations around us literally have to be forced to do the right things. And if you recall her article last week, it was about the Radium Girls. These were girls during World War I that were hired to help paint certain things that glow and were exposed to radium in a way that their whole bodies were glowing. They were taught that to get a fine point on their paintbrush, they had to put it in their mouth. And pretty soon their bodies were glowing and they were dying. And the company that had hired them to do so and didn't put their safety into any kind of account at all. Well, they accused them all of just being whores with syphilis. That's probably what was wrong, rather than what was really happening. But because of what happened to them, some of the women that lived, they started forcing labor laws and pushing hard for labor laws that we needed. Because even clear back at 100 years ago, corporations didn't give a shit about their employees. It was all about what they could earn. No different now, except for that more laws have been built and OSHA was built. OSHA is, of course, the overseer of safety in any industry in the United States. And OSHA is hated by a lot of companies, corporations, whatnot, because of the rules that they insist on, but they have saved, well, we'll never know how many lives. But this is an interesting conversation continuing from the Radium Girls up to now. And a good thought on how HR is not there for you, they're there for the company. An interesting conversation. Take a look. Okay, my tip this week is the lantern spread. This is a spread that I thought would be fun during this time of year, as we are holding the light and waiting for more to return. So there's five positions laid out here with five questions. And somehow I didn't manage to, or five positions, I somehow didn't manage to number those, but I think you'll get the point of it. So the first position is your current flame, meaning What's got you lit up right now? The second position is what dims your light. That's that warning card of what you need to be thinking about. The third position is who supports you, your light keepers, who to lean into, who to consider. The fourth position is what you illuminate for others. And the fifth position is how to shine your light wisely and sustainably. It could be another warning card of things that you need to understand, things that you need to think about, things that you maybe need to avoid or just consider. It's all right there. So, with all of that being said, give it a try. See what you think. I laid it out for me this morning and I thought it was really interesting and telling. And that, my friends, is what we have time for today. I went on too long about Cookie Day. but there is more in Luminous for you to check out, of course. I do want to remind you that I am a professional psychic advisor, and you can find me over at 12listen.com every day. That's number 12listen.com. If ever you come there and I'm not signed in, I'm probably podcasting. So just do a scheduled call or a callback request, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. But I am there daily. And I can help you out with the psychic reading, energy work, animal communication, mediumship. I'll do anything I can to help you. I will be back next week, same place, same time. Until then, take good care of yourselves. Enjoy that full moon. It's going to be a doozy coming up in a couple of days. And we'll talk about it next week. Thanks so much for being here. This has been yet another production of The Katie Weaver Show here on 12 Radio, where we're changing the way you listen to the world.